Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to the penultimate episode of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined, as always, by my co-host and partner in crime in this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series. And of course, I am talking about Paul Shields. And Paul, we are here. It is episode 199. That is right. Tomorrow is big milestone episode 200. And what a great show we have today leading into episode 200 tomorrow. So let's get things started. And before I send it over to you, I just wanted to get your thoughts very quickly on a strange situation that came out late last night. And that is with the Boston Celtics head coach Udoku, who had a great first season as a head coach in the NBA with the Celtics, and different things like that. He is facing a one-year suspension in the 2022-2023 season for having an inappropriate relationship with a staffer. We don't know much of the details as of right now. Do you have any thoughts at all on how this weird story came to pass late last night?
No, I don't necessarily have any thoughts beyond, you know, the fact that we don't really know what's happened. We don't know the circumstances. As of today, this morning, they're reporting that the relationship was, while it was intimate in nature, it was also consensual. But it goes against the code of conduct in one way or another that, you know, the Boston Celtics have. So, I'm hesitant to comment on it beyond the obvious of, if this is two adults who have done something, you know, if they're, you know, married people and they've done something maybe morally questionable in, you know, cheating on their spouses, but not to the level of, you know, sexual misconduct or assault, then, you know, I don't really know what the recourse is beyond the company saying, hey, you can't have a relationship with a subordinate, right? And, you know, them having to deal with that in their personal lives. If it becomes more malicious and more evil than that, when it comes to, you know, abuse of power or sexual misconduct or things like that, that becomes an entirely different conversation, and one that needs to be had more often and louder as we continue to see, you know, inappropriate behavior happen throughout all of sports. So I'm hesitant to go down one path or the other because there are two very different paths here. And too much, you know, as of today, we just don't have a lot of information.
Yeah, exactly. There's too much gray area still. Obviously, it'll be.
And sorry, Spence, I don't mean to cut you off, but when you say that, you're right to say there's always gray area in these environments. The big question that I would ask is, did somebody use their position of power to force a relationship that was unwanted? Or was it, you know, two adults who made their own decision and now have to deal with the consequences of being in a relationship together? Because I think that's two very different things, right?
Right.
Both have their consequences, but one is an overarching conversation that, you know, we've seen so much this over the last few years and throughout, well, forever basically, but really come to light with Hockey Canada and the scandal there, and you know, so many other situations like that, and so many horrors coming to light. So yeah, like I said, it's there's so much gray area in situations like this, and I'm hesitant to say too much specific to this situation until we have more information.
Switching gears to the NHL for a moment, I just want to get your thoughts quickly as well on a sad story, because once again, it was announced that star defenseman Ryan Ellis will more than likely miss the majority of the upcoming season, if not all of the upcoming season. He is currently dealing with a mid-body injury and has been dealing with it for a while now. Ryan Ellis, when he is healthy, has proven to be one of the top defensemen in all of the NHL. The problem is, in the last three seasons or so specifically, he's just not been able to stay healthy at all. And I believe he's only played, you know, maybe a grand total of 45 games in the last four seasons. I could be wrong about that, but it's just really sad because he is very talented, or was very talented when he was healthy.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Ryan Ellis. He's from, you know, this area, the area that I call home. So yeah, you're looking at, you know, he was traded to Philadelphia for last season, and he only managed to play four games there. And the previous two seasons before that, we had 49 and 35. So there's, you know, I mean, one of those seasons was shortened, so don't look too much into that, but it was really last season and the season before where you're seeing those injuries creep up. I am hopeful that he is able to sort out the issue and sort out his injuries and come back, because I think he's a very effective player. It's unfortunate that, you know, it's unfortunate they're going into another season like this with him, particularly for a Philadelphia team that's looking for some culture change, right? They brought in Tortorella. They didn't like what was happening prior to that. They let some, they made some trades, let some people go, brought some people in. And I think Ryan Ellis was one of those culture guys that was brought to the team last season to try and, you know, change the flow, change the energy, change the culture, however you want to say it. And it's really, really hard for a player who is injured to have that kind of impact on the team, right? It's they're just not around the team enough. They're not on the ice enough with the team. So a really, really tough blow for a team that's looking for a spark and looking for, you know, talented players with good work ethic. And I think that's, you could put Ryan Ellis in that category any day.
Right. Any thoughts before we leave the hockey conversation in the split squad games and exhibition games pretty much on the horizon in the next couple of days? I know we both are excited about the season starting in 3 weeks from now on October the 12th and 13th, respectively. But any thoughts on actual teams hitting the ice in the next day or so?
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I'm of two minds. Obviously, preseason hockey is like preseason in any other sport. It really means nothing. They're basically glorified exhibition games, and you're really just hoping that the stars of your team make it through your training camp without any injury. That being said, there are, you know, in the team that we follow most closely, the Maple Leafs, a couple injuries were announced as they started training camp yesterday that provide a little bit of intrigue, right? As we know, Maple Leafs have been in the upper echelon of regular season teams over the last handful of years. So it doesn't leave a tremendous amount of room for roster battles, right? You see this with a lot of good teams in the league. There's not a whole lot of room for error for guys trying to make the squad. There's not a lot of spots available. But with the injuries to Timothy Liljegren and Pierre Engvall, pretty much keeping them out. I mean, Liljegren will be out for the beginning part of the season, and Engvall might be ready for day one of camp or of the regular season, but he's probably looking at a late October, early November return. That opens up some spots on the bottom six forwards and in the top six defensemen. So I'll be interested to see some of the guys that they've brought in action, be interested to see what some of the prospects look like. And yeah, really just chomping at the bit for the actual season to start. I know that we'll do a proper preview of the Canadian teams for sure and talk about the NHL on the whole, but I thought the media availability for the Maple Leafs was interesting yesterday to find out about the injuries. And I think it just puts a little bit of a different spotlight on a few guys who maybe thought they didn't have a chance to make this team, now having the opportunity to do so.
And last but certainly not least, before we head into our week three preview of the NFL, I want to get your thoughts. Are you concerned at all? Concerned is the wrong word, because the Blue Jays have been playing fairly good baseball as of late. They won a very sloppy game that we talked about yesterday, 18-11 on Tuesday night against Philly to start that two-game series. And it was a pitcher's duel for the most part yesterday through seven innings or eight innings, where it was 0-0, and then Vladimir Guerrero Jr. hit a three-run homer to go up 3-0 in the eighth, and then they just gave it right back and let them tie it up 3-3 in the bottom of the eighth, only ultimately losing in extra innings 4-3 to the Philadelphia Phillies. I know it's just one game, but one game, as we know, can be glaring to get into the playoffs when you're in a playoff race. And we have Jose Berríos starting the four-game series tonight in Tampa Bay down at the Trop. And we also know historically that the Blue Jays do not play well at the Trop, even though they're not going to have to face Shane McClanahan in the series now, because Shane McClanahan once again went on the IL with some discomfort.
Yeah, I'm not worried even a little bit. The Blue Jays have put themselves in a position where they are on top of that wild card race. Their record over the last 20 games is ludicrous. You know, even over the last 10 games, they're 6-4. So they're still on a winning pace. They're the only team in the wild card hunt right now that has that winning, has a positive winning percentage over their last 10. And if we expand that to 20 games, even more. They've had an incredible September. So there had to be an evening out portion. It's unfortunate. Jimmy Garcia has been pitching a lot lately, and he's been giving up runs, which are not common. We don't see that with him a whole lot. So I'm wondering more about, you know, pitchers like Bass, who they talked a little bit about on the announcing team last night. He hasn't pitched since Friday. And, you know, there was an opportunity to use him in that high leverage situation, and they didn't. So you wonder if there's some issues going on. Maybe guys are a little tired. Maybe you're trying to save arms for the as we get to the wild card, which I do understand, right? We're, you know, what are we, 10, 12 games from the end of the season now? So there has to be an eye towards the future. And the Blue Jays right now, because of their incredible play, they won six of the last seven series they've played in. So, you know, there had to be a kind of a settle to the mean, but all of that good play means that the Blue Jays have put themselves in the driver's seat. 2.5 up on Tampa, you know, I guess 6 up or something on Baltimore, 6.5 up on Baltimore. So they have done the work to put themselves in the position that they need to be in as we go into the playoffs. So all they have to do now is go to the Trop and play good baseball, which they have been doing, right? They have a chance to put Tampa in the rear view, or at worst, they have a chance to keep them behind the Blue Jays, right? So you have to continue to play well. You have to continue to win ball games. But I'm not super concerned about a couple sloppy games against a non-divisional rival, a team that's also fighting for their playoff lives, right? You know, in the NL, the Phillies are sort of, they're doing the same thing that the Orioles are doing they're in the third wild card. Pardon me, I misspoke. So they're trying to hang on to their wild card spot too. So it's not like they were playing, you know, a team that's completely out of the mix, right? Those games are important for them as well. So I'm not super concerned about it. I'm more curious to see what the bullpen arms will look like in this series. And maybe John Schneider was holding out a couple important relievers and trying to get a little extra rest, because this series is going to feel a lot like the playoffs coming up.
Do you believe the same thing I do in terms of, we know that the Yankee series could loom large in Toronto starting on Monday for a multitude of different reasons. We also know that a couple of days ago on Tuesday night, Aaron Judge helped that dramatic comeback in the ninth inning versus the Pirates, where he hit his 60th home run. He did not hit a home run last night, but part of me hopes that he hits 61 or even 62 before Monday, so that we don't have to necessarily worry about that side story and storyline. Because yes, it would be nice to see it and things like that, but it's just another distraction, so to speak. So I'm hoping that he gets it over with this weekend. I don't know if I'm being too much of a Scrooge by saying that, but that's my own philosophy.
No, I think I would love the storyline in Jays Yankee series to be, can the Jays catch the Yankees, more so than can Judge catch the record, right? Because obviously that's incredibly biased commentary, but that, you know, this is my team and I've never made any bones about being a fan of the Blue Jays. What I will say though, is if he hasn't reached that record by the time that series comes around, it would be pretty cool to be in the building to see something so historic. Much like I said, I think on yesterday's show or the day before, the best of both worlds would be watching Aaron Judge hit a monster home run and then watching the Yankees lose, like, you know, 8-2 or whatever.
Yes. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure. Now let's talk about week 3 in the NFL. There are some good games, but a lot of them are really bad games, in my opinion, for week 3. And so I want to get your thoughts first and foremost on an interesting game at 4:25 Eastern time, and that is the LA Rams going into the Cardinals and facing Kyler Murray and the Cardinals after that tremendous comeback from 3 touchdowns down last week for Kyler and the guys to beat the Raiders. Do you believe that they ride that momentum at all, or do you believe that the Rams have enough firepower with Cooper Kupp and some others, along with Aaron Donald on defense, to stifle any momentum that Kyler and the boys have carried over from last week?
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before. Momentum, I don't necessarily believe in momentum from game to game. In the game is a little different, but from week to week, particularly in a sport where you play and then your next game is not for another full week. I think that LA is a better team. I think that, you know, they got just stonewalled by a very good Buffalo team on week 1, and that game could have got a lot uglier than it was, and I think they sort of righted their ship a little bit in week 2, played much better. But we still haven't seen that offense really take off, right? Like they were very proficient last season and we're still sort of waiting for them to break out. I think the Cardinals have some really nice pieces on defense, but this to me feels like a game where LA might be able to get on track. And I don't know if Kyler Murray can keep up if this LA offense starts rolling. So I tend to lean towards the Rams here. I still just don't have trust in the Cardinals.
Do you believe that the Rams cover 4?
I think so. Yeah, I probably. Where's the game? Are they in LA or are they in Arizona? I don't see that here. Let me see.
They're in Arizona at State Farm Stadium.
Yeah, so I mean, home dogs often cover, right? Like that. I mean, I still think I like the Rams in that 4 points. I feel like that offense can break out. So I think that I'd be leaning on the favorites here. It does, having it in Arizona makes a difference, right? Makes a difference. That team traditionally plays pretty well at home, but I still think I would lean towards the Rams. I'm looking at a big offensive week. And I think Kyler Murray can keep it close, but I don't think that he can keep up with that Rams team.
Another 4:25 matchup that's intriguing for week 3. Pitts, Aaron Rodgers and his young receivers against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We know that Mike Evans will not be available for this game after his one-game suspension was upheld. And we also know that Julio Jones was inactive last week with a knee issue. We don't know if he's going to be playing yet this week, and so on and so forth. Right now, Tampa Bay is favored only by 1 point. I'm leaning towards Aaron Rodgers in this perspective because Tom Brady has not looked very good in the first couple weeks of the season, and we don't know how long it'll take for him to start clicking on all cylinders because he did miss that time in training camp and different things like that. Obviously, you can never count out Tom Brady and Leonard Fournette and different things, but I truly believe that Green Bay could upset Tampa Bay in week three.
Yeah, and I mean, how much of an upset is it really, right? 1 point is really a pick'em game. I tend to agree with you. And you know what? I think that if Tom Brady had looked more Brady-esque in the first couple games of the season, might feel a little more confident knowing that he doesn't have as many weapons as he once had. I know they just put a receiver on the practice squad and his name escapes me. The former Buffalo Bill. Do you know if he's been activated to the active roster?
I don't know who you're talking about. So if I knew who we're talking about, I'd be able to tell you, but I'll vamp a little bit here while you search the Google machine there and see if it comes up. But it definitely will be interesting, and that'll be an X factor if he is already activated.
Sorry, Cole Beasley was the name that I was searching for. I'm curious, like that. So he provides an X factor that I don't know the Buccaneers have had this season, right? With the departure of Gronk and some injuries to, you know, Julio Jones, and now with Mike Evans suspended. But Cole Beasley creates a threat through the middle of the field that I don't think we've seen Tampa have much this year. So that does throw an interesting wrinkle into it.
Not Chris Godwin being injured as well, too.
Right. Yes. Thank you. Chris Godwin's also hurt. So so to sort of finish my thought, I think if Brady had looked more Brady-esque, I would not be as concerned about his weapons being taken away, because he's shown an ability to elevate many a player in his career. Right. So that wouldn't be as shocking. But with the way that he has started the year with, you know, maybe just not getting the reps that he usually would because of the training camp, you know, and needing to be away from the team, I would lean towards the Packers young receivers making a few more plays this week, like they did last week, and Aaron Rodgers being really dialed in, more so than Tom Brady sort of finding some magic with these players. I do think this is going to be a very good game, but I just think the Bucs are too shorthanded to win here.
Right. Moving on, let's talk about another intriguing matchup, and that is the San Francisco 49ers going into Mile High on Sunday night to take on Russell Wilson and the Broncos. The Broncos were able to win in week two, another ugly game, 16-9, I believe the final score was. And Jimmy G was able to come in after Trey Lance got injured with his broken ankle, and the Niners were able to win 27-7. You and I have talked about it before. Jimmy Garoppolo just knows how to win. That's what he does. And it'll be interesting to see what type of momentum, if at all, he's able to ride now, knowing that the ship is now his for the foreseeable future again, because Trey is out for the season. But on the other side, you have a Russell Wilson-led team that wants to still prove itself, because it wasn't a clean game by any means in week two for them, and they were lucky to win the way that they did as well. So what do you make of the Sunday nighter? Right now, it is the 49ers favored by two. And once again, that's almost a pick'em game. But because it's in Mile High and the thin air of Mile High, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Russell Wilson and the Broncos in this one.
Yeah, I see this completely differently. I think that having Jimmy Garoppolo back in the pocket for the 49ers is actually a boost to that team. And while I don't think they would ever say it publicly, you know, Jimmy is such a liked player in that locker room. He's had so much success with a lot of the players on that field. I think that he brings a confidence to that group that, you know, someone like Trey Lance would have needed to earn. And that's not to say that anybody in that locker room doesn't like Trey Lance or they weren't willing to play for him. Sorry?
It's called veteran leadership.
Well, he's got that veteran leadership, but also, like, you know, he's been there with those guys. The players on that team know exactly what to expect. And more importantly, they know how to win with Jimmy Garoppolo. And I honestly think that them only being favored by two is a little bit of a slap in the face, because I don't see the Broncos. I'm seeing more of the Russell Wilson we saw last year with the Seahawks than I am seeing the Russell Wilson that he believes he is, and now with the Broncos signed a bazillion-dollar extension with, right? So, I like, for me, this is the 49ers all day, every day. The Broncos still have a lot to prove to me, and I just haven't seen it in the first 2 weeks, where I think San Francisco, with Jimmy G back at the helm, is a team that looks better than it did to start last week's game.
Okay, and just to finish off on the Sunday games, one of the most intriguing games of the week, in my opinion, ends off the 1 o'clock window, and that is the 2-0 Buffalo Bills, after two great, great weeks to start their season, going into Miami and facing Tua and the Dolphins. After Tua and the Dolphins woke up against the Ravens last week in the second half and had one of the best second halves that we've seen in a long, long time, and crushed a lot of people who had Baltimore winning that game in the end, and different things like that. Yes, I believe that the Bills are going to win the game. Right now, the Bills, however, are favored by 6 points. I believe that the Dolphins will keep it closer than that, because historically, even over the years, the Bills and the Dolphins play really, really close contests. So do you believe that the Dolphins will cover the plus 6, but the Bills will win? Or once again, do you see this completely different than me?
I don't know that I see it completely different, but I do think Buffalo covers. I've got 6 in front of me. I don't know what you've got in front of you.
Yes.
But, I mean, the question of there's two questions, is can the Dolphins secondary slow down, you know, Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs, which I don't think they can. And can Tua keep up, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, which I don't think they can. I'm of the belief that the only team that can beat the Buffalo Bills is in fact the Buffalo Bills. So if they continue to improve, right, because week one was pretty sloppy. Week two had some sloppy moments, but was a better overall effort and just a dominating performance. And now as we go into week three, if they're starting to clean up their game, then I think that's going to be a really challenging day for the Dolphins. Like, don't forget, that was a huge comeback last week for them to win. If they get themselves in a situation like that against Buffalo, I don't think there's any chance they're coming back from 21 down or whatever it was. So I think the Bills cover. I do agree with you that, you know, Miami has become a hard place to play. These teams tend to play close games. So I don't think that the Bills are going to dominate the way that they might have last week, but I don't see Miami in the same league, and I don't see them within a touchdown this week.
Right. And moving to the Monday Nighter, I never thought at our preview a couple of weeks ago that I would ever utter the sentence that I'm about to utter. But in the Monday Nighter, it is possibly one of the worst matchups of the year, with Dak Prescott being injured and now the Cooper Rush-led Cowboys, after the wonderful week that they had in week two, going into the wonderful stadium known as MetLife Stadium in New York to take on the 2-0 seemingly rejuvenated New York Giants. Do you believe that the New York Giants will be 3-0 heading into week four? Or do you think that this will be just a sloppy game going back and forth, and that the Cowboys might end up squeaking out a win here?
Yeah, that's, I mean, who would have guessed that the Giants would be 2-0? Certainly not me. I just don't think they're a very good football team. And I think if we were looking at the Cowboys at full strength, this would probably be a Cowboys win all day. But, you know, for everything that you just mentioned, this might be, it might be an intriguing game, or certainly one that's hard to predict. I am surprised the Giants are favored.
Let's be honest too. We didn't expect the Cowboys to go in and face Cincinnati the way that they did last week either, right?
So I truly don't know what to expect from either of these teams on Monday, which I think is what makes it so fascinating. You know, the Giants, you know, sort of quieted some of the talk about their week one game, you know, what maybe being a fluke or maybe not being, you know, what we would see, and played pretty well last week in their game. And the Cowboys came out of nowhere, right? Like, I don't think anyone expected Cooper Rush to be able to lead that team to a victory. So while I don't know that this is going to be a very entertaining game, I do think it's going to be very fascinating to see what these two teams bring. And for the first time in a long time, I might be leaning towards the Cowboys because I don't trust the Giants. I mean, I don't trust the Cowboys either, but they might be feeling a little more confident seeing Cooper Rush get it done, right? Get that big win. That might give them a little bit of that confidence in their quarterback to go in and sneak out, if not a win, certainly a cover. But I think this is going to be a close, ugly game.
Right. It'll be intriguing. And, you know, for the first time in a long time, I'll tune in to Monday Night Football just to see how it all breaks down, because either which way it breaks down is going to be fun to talk about on Tuesday. That is for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, before we end the penultimate episode of the Isolation Series, is there anything that you want to talk about that we haven't covered yet, my friend?
You know, I think the only thing that we haven't talked about from a week, a busy week in sports, is the Las Vegas Aces winning the first NBA title, or their first NBA title, with Coach Becky Hammond at the helm. You know, she stepped away from a Spurs assistant coaching job to take the head coach's job here, and finally gets that elusive title after not getting one in a storied playing career in the WNBA. So congratulations to the Las Vegas Aces and to their head coach.
100%. I'm a big fan of Becky Hammond, and I believe that Becky Hammond is only going to be in the WNBA as a head coach for a couple of years until she becomes the first ever NBA head coach, because working under Greg Popovich for all those years, being the first ever assistant woman head coach in NBA history, you know, she's making a trailblazer path for herself, and has been since she stepped off the court. And I think that's going to continue, where one of these teams in the NBA are going to wake up and give her an opportunity in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay. And just before we go, do you want to talk a little bit about tomorrow's 200th episode and give people sort of a preview of what to expect on our historic 200th episode, which is tomorrow, my friend?
You know, Spence, I think all we need to say is that we have a great guest. It's a friend of the show, somebody who was on our show right near the very beginning. And, you know, we are extremely excited at the opportunity to have him on again. And, you know, I'll say for our music fans, fans of the show that like when we have musical guests on, they should absolutely be tuning in tomorrow to episode 200.
Yes. And you should also tune in, because much like Paul and I have done at various points of the podcast, there's some good ribbing happening throughout tomorrow's 200th episode as well.
Absolutely.
Yes.
We always know how to have fun, Spence.
We do. We do. But this wraps up the penultimate episode, 199 of the Isolation Series, for Thursday, the 22nd of September, 2022. I am Spencer Miller. That, once again, is Paul Shields. We appreciate you watching and or listening. And just before we end the show today, I want to send a big thank you once again out to all of our sponsors and all of our supporters throughout 200 episodes of the podcast, without whom we wouldn't be able to do what we do and bring it to you as often as we do. So again, big, big thank you to everybody that has helped us throughout the couple of years and throughout the duration of time of the isolation series. Paul and I absolutely love bringing it to you as often as we do. And I'm going to throw it over to you because I know that you like to say something to the people as well, especially when we have milestone episodes. So would you like to say anything ahead of our 200th episode tomorrow?
No, just, you know, it's been a lot of fun. We continue to put out content that people want to listen to. And, you know, we thank everybody for listening to our good takes, our bad takes, and everything in between. So it's been a lot of fun. We'll continue to do it as long as we're having fun and as long as people are enjoying it.
Yes. And for the bad takes, you can blame Paul more than me because, full disclosure, he edits the episodes. So if I say something and tell him that I want him to take it out, and he says, no, there's not really anything I can do about it, ladies and gentlemen. So there you go. But we do hope you enjoy episode 200 tomorrow. We hope you comment and like episode 200. And we look forward to coming at you again on Monday with Richard Garner to start off another 100 episodes on our march to the 300th episode. Thanks very much for listening and or watching this. Has been the Isolation Series, episode 199. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @vspencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.